A very good evening to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So today is our Thursday class, 8th of October 2020. Just relax body and mind and maintain some form of attention. Then we will have our half an hour of awareness-based meditation to train our mind to be quiet, to be peaceful and just aware within. That's why we need the first three support to develop it. First support is relax into all mind state. Both body and mind relax. When you are relaxed, you are at ease, you got no problem. In Mandarin, they call 自在, 自在. So you just relax. Then maintain awareness is the second support, aware. Don't try to know, just aware. Whatever that arises, aware. Even when thought arises, do not resist, do not fight, do not suppress, do not control, do not want it to go away. Just relax. Maintain awareness. Just aware. Whatever arises, aware. That is meditation. When you are aware, you can understand that you don't do any other thing. Thought is not active. When thought is not active, the mundane mind will slowly slow down, return to its original state before the thinking, the arising of thought, the creation of mundane thinking or sankhara activity. When you understand all this, then meditation becomes easy. So the first support is relax. Second support, maintain awareness. Third support, 24 hours for as long as you can. Then just let things be. To experience and realize the true mind, the silent mind within. That is your meditative mind. That is your awareness nature. It is not a thought. It is not a being. It has no one inside there. It's a nature. That's why it's anatta. That nature is the original nature, oneness nature. It's always there, ever shining. Relax body and mind and maintain some form of attention. Then we will start with our sharing. We will continue from page 230, 5.3.16 of the Heart Sutta, second edition. The subtitle is The Mystery of Life Unfolds. So here it is very meaningful. The purpose of meditation is to develop the understanding, the wisdom. When you develop the ability to understand, and when the wisdom dawns upon you, you start to have the ability to see clearly what life is all about. The mystery of life, the beauty of life, and how life unfold in front of you, then this wisdom, this understanding will allow you to understand many things. That's how the mystery of life unfolds clearly. Then with this understanding, you become beautiful. You are no longer deluded. You have awakened. So only enlightened beings have this ability to understand life, to develop the clear understanding, to enable the mystery of life to unfold from moment to moment, then everything becomes very clear. I will read on, then you will understand how it can happen. I will continue with J. Krishnamurti quote. This one is a refresher. Means it's like a recap of our earlier sharing. Then the next one is what? after Jay Krishnamurti defined what awareness is. He said awareness is a silent and choiceless observation of what is. So this one we have gone through. Eh? Then it said, in this awareness, the problem unveils itself. Eh? Although they use the word unrolls itself. I prefer to use the word unfold itself or reveal itself. This can happen because when you silence your mind and maintain awareness, the phenomena will tell you the story. Your silent mind will understand. The phenomena without thought will awaken to it and understand what it is. That is how you will understand without words. How contact trigger of consciousness. Not only consciousness, within the content that you input into, there is also feeling which will simultaneously also arise. You will come to know them all, not through the textbook knowledge, not through the one-dimensional dependent origination that says upon contact, feeling arise. Then you go and look for the feeling. This is being gullible. Oh, this is so gullible, isn't it? Just like a physics experiment. Upon contact of the switch, the light bulb lights up. So in a similar way, upon contact of mind with the sense basis, consciousness come to be. You become conscious of what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you tactile, feel, and think. The mind become conscious first. And then within, there is also the content of consciousness, where perception and feeling, they simultaneously also arise. Then feeling will be stirred and be conditioned into craving because of your sakayadity or self-delusion due to your lack of wisdom or wise attention, yoniso manasikara, at the moment of sense experience or contact. You have instead a yoniso manasikara, which is unwise attention because you lack wisdom. So this is how living being gets into trouble. So when you understand all these movements, and when you can see them clearly with your silent mind or awareness nature, the whole mystery of life slowly unfolds itself. Then you will start to understand how you function as a human being, following the dependent origination or the 12 links. That's why when you develop the silent mind, don't try to know anything. And when you meditate, don't try to know or try to say, is this sati? Or is this anicca? Or is this what the Buddha said as man as anatta? But after the meditation, you can reflect and contemplate. But when you are meditating or doing it, never ever do that. If you do that, what does it mean? It means the thought is trying to come in from the back door to tell you all these things. Then how can you be in the state of sati anymore? Who says anicca? Your thought. That is why Dhamma-based and thought-based meditation will have all this problem. So Dhamma-based and thought-based means knowledge-based. Eh? Meditation will have all this problem. Then you may say, oh, I have realized already. This is what the books say. This is what the Buddha said. All these are your thoughts, verbalization. Then there was a question from a sister, Sister Bilan. I think she's from Klang. She asked, is this the reason why when you go for certain retreat, they don't allow you to read books? In fact, quite often, you go to certain temple, they have this rule for the first 3 or 6 months, you cannot read books. Then I answer her, I say, yes, there are some truth in that statement. That is, when you meditate, don't read anything. But it does not apply to everyone, because some people or cultivator who had cultivated before in their past, if they read, the moment they read truth or they read about the truth, they can awaken straight away to it. So it doesn't mean that you cannot read. You can read, but don't be gullible. Don't attach or carry that knowledge and information in your brain. When you meditate, have an open mind. That is what choiceless awareness is all about. Do not verbalize while you are doing the meditation. Like, oh, I remember what the text say, what the Buddha say. Then you are finished, because it has become heedlessness. You have become heedless already. Do you understand? Actually, it's not the Buddha or the textbook. It is your thought that said, and you cannot see all this. And you somehow say you have sati. So the English is not so good. I have to rephrase it a bit. And you still think you are such a great meditator. We are saying that I have been meditating for 20, 30 or 40 years already. So don't come and tell me all this. Of course, the word is bullshit. But actually, they cannot see their own thought. They keep on quoting the book or the text via their thought, which is accumulated knowledge and not wisdom. And because they cannot see their own thought, they become deluded. So this is what delusion is all about. Always remember, when you meditate, don't try to know. Don't try to do anything. Just silently observe choiceless awareness. Then the best approach is assume you don't know anything. That's why I say you begin with a clean slate. Do not carry any knowledge or information or memory. Like a newborn baby, everything is just a simple one. Not cunning, not sophisticated, don't have views, opinion, and conditioning. Have an open mind. Open mind means leave the memory as it is. Do not go and allow them to come in and interfere with your observation or meditation. So begin with a clean slate. Assume you don't know anything. That everything you do in the name of meditation, it's an investigation, means you observe and find out what is the truth. If it's the truth, it will stand up to investigation and you will have a lot of joy and understanding, because truth is, the reality is. So the silent, choiceless awareness of the reality or what is meditation. So if you do that, you will not get into trouble. You will not get yourself entangled, which means you are observing nature. You are seeing things as they are, not according to what your brain or memory tell you, your conditioning, your views and your opinion tell you. Through this observation, you understand by itself. That's why that nature awakened, or that nature, the silent mind, insight into phenomena. That it understands why the mundane mind reacts and stir, how you become fearful, emotional, the lack of peace. You start to understand. So choiceless awareness is very important, but you must have that sati or mindfulness, the silent mind, the awareness. Without the awareness, you can't. So the silent awareness that observe without choice, choiceless awareness of the reality within the moment. Okay, we go on. So you have to ask yourself, you ask, oh sorry, there's another question. Oh, we have finished your song. Oh, okay. So now we move on to the next subsection, 5.3.17, voluntary, involuntary, and spontaneous action. So there was a question by Mr. Chai. Is it breathing or heartbeat? We don't have to think about it because it will go on by itself. But when we come to the unconscious, subconscious, and voluntary or involuntary action, how do you develop the understanding? So this was the question. Then I answer him. I said, you ask about voluntary and involuntary action, right? So you have to ask yourself, what is action? Action is the form of mind or the human being doing something through the thought. Correct or not? Then voluntary action means there is a will involved, as against spontaneous action when you don't think. So this is the main difference. Within the field of thoughts and awareness, there are three types of action: voluntary, involuntary, and spontaneous. But for your case, you only have two because you are only capable of acting within the field of thought. Have you studied biology? Or you studied biology before? Voluntary action is when you have a will to define what you want or intend to do. Like you want to come out of your sitting meditation. Then voluntarily, you come out of the sitting meditation. But for the biological experience, it is different. They normally ask you to put your leg, cross up your leg. Then the biology teacher will use a rubber hammer to knock your knee. Automatically and involuntarily, it reacts, it jerks. That one is involuntary action. That one has nothing to do with the thought, it's intention. But from your physical, through nerve response, it just moves. That's involuntary action, whereby voluntary action is through your will. The third one is via wisdom. Spontaneously you will act. You don't go through memory. You go through your wisdom, your understanding, from your nature, from your heart. There is no will involved, no desire, no craving, no pre-planning, no checking with the memory to inquire whether to do or don't do. Like that better or like that better? This is very crude English. If you act like that, it means you don't have wisdom. If you have wisdom, you don't have to think or consider, but instead, you just act spontaneously. Because according to Jay Krishnamurti, acting according to memory is not acting at all. So this aspect I have explained many times. You only consider and think initially, just like when the Buddha taught the Kalama Sutta to the Kalamas. He said, whatever they teach to you, you have to check. If I do it, does it harm myself or harm others? That one, you use thought to develop the understanding initially. Then you decide to do or not to do. Then if it's the truth, it doesn't hurt you and hurt others, then you do. When you cultivate until you awaken, you have awakened already, or you have developed the wisdom already, then you will do things differently, because you will do things spontaneously via wisdom. You don't have to think anymore. Spontaneously, it will prompt you, and you will know how to act. Because if you go to the mundane mind, the thought, without the wisdom, the thought is always selfish and egoic. But when you do it via wisdom, you just act spontaneously. Where that wisdom will enable you to act. You no need to refer to anything. Well, when you start to refer, you are weighing, you are thinking, for me or not for me, is it beneficial to me or non-beneficial to me, does it help me in any way? So this one is the mundane, selfish, egoic mind weighing the option that is favorable with selfish intention. They cannot act with wisdom and understanding. Everything also must have a reason, a beneficial reason. Yeah. So if you don't have a beneficial reason, then you will not act. Especially before you have the Dhamma understanding, before you develop the wisdom and awaken, you check back all your action. You always weigh. Is it beneficial to me, or to my race, or to my company, or to my country and all those things? So if it's something that doesn't benefit you, or your company, or your race, or your whatever, then you have a tendency not to act. So this is selfishness. The mundane mind, before it has the Dhamma or awakening, is always selfish. It always acts via selfish, what they call selfish way. Means you weigh whether there is benefits behind what you do. So all your actions are based on selfishness. For me or not for me. If it's not for me, if there is no benefit, no advantage, you will not do. If it's nothing to do with your career advancement or involving your loved ones and others, you don't want to help, you don't want to do. You don't want to go ahead with those type of action. Whereas the one that has the Dhamma and the wisdom, they do not weigh, they do not try to think or consider whether they should act this way or that way. Their actions are always spontaneous, based on understanding. The moment they understand, they act. Sometimes it may be in a situation where that person involved has no relationship with him. He or she may not know that person, but because there is condition for him to or her to act, they will act spontaneously. That's what wisdom is all about. Wisdom is without consideration of benefits or who that person is, whether I know him or I don't know him, whether he is my race, he is my colleague, my friend or fellow countryman or not. It's just like that metta subject that we go through. It's independent of caste, race, other type of identity. Yes. My daughter has something to add. So we will share.
Just occurred to me that regarding this topic, I had many times experienced that the actions that I think a lot about or I have dilemma about, I have expected result at the end, right? There's a goal I want to achieve by
Yeah.
making that action. But when it is a spontaneous one, right? It feels in a way like whether it makes a difference or not, it doesn't matter
Yeah,
anymore.
very
I do because
good.
there was a condition to do it, or I felt an affinity for it, or there was a lot of wholesomeness that I hope it will bring. Whether it happens or not doesn't matter.
Yeah,
But it was
smarter.
with a hope that this one would help, and then it's just done, and then
Yeah.
no more expectation. That one actually felt very different, very
Yeah.
very nice. Yeah.
Sadhu. Very good. Huh? Let's rejoice. Because when you act with spontaneous understanding, it doesn't matter. People will feel funny. How come you act this way? He's not related to you. And yet you can do it. It's because the understanding within, the wisdom, the Dhamma, manifests the action due to understanding. Where the condition like that, things will be like that. So you act based on affinity and condition and understanding. You don't act because of that selfish intent. Means there is no selfishness. There is no greed behind. There is no weighing of benefits or advantage behind. Then there is no self behind the action. It understands it's just a form of mind. Everything is dependent, originating, condition, arising, causal phenomena. So whatever arises, there are causes and conditions. If the causes and condition is appropriate, this nature will accord and flow. That's why it does not decide what to do. It just accord and flow. When there is condition to do, it will do. When there is condition to act, it will act. Without condition, it will not act. All these are spontaneous action based on understanding. It doesn't go and think, then come out with the cunningness and all those things. No more. So this is the way of Dhamma, acting with understanding. Act using wisdom. So how to act is very important. And the most important understanding is you have the mindfulness and the awareness. Then you will come to know acting according to memory is not acting at all. You will see this through your mindfulness and your awareness. You know, what is memory? Accumulation of experiences. And what are these experiences? Good and bad. Your fear, your phobia, your insecurities, your views, your opinion, your conditioning, even your scars of memory. Then all this has nothing to do with wisdom. All these are actually your psychological memory that has defilement, especially your fear, your phobia, your insecurity. So you have seen how people cheat you and how at times you yourself also cheated on others. Then what do? You preempt yourself. That's why you feel insecure. So when you see somebody, the thought straight away tell you, hey, this guy up to no good. He is of that character that can actually take advantage of me or cheat me or deceive me or lie to me and do all those funny things to me. So in order to preempt, out of that fear, the insecurity, then you try to act. So you are acting according to your fear, your phobia, your insecurity, your lack of understanding, or you are acting according to your views, opinion, and conditioning, or belief system and tradition, traditional belief and all that. So this type of action are very negative, full of delusion and evil roots. And there is no action at all. That's why you are acting according to all the negativity of mind state, which are not wisdom. And most people act according to memory, which are your knowledge, your views, your opinion, and your condition, and all the rubbish that you carry inside, including your fear, your phobia, scars of memory, and many other things. So true action is when you cultivate the Dhamma, when you have the Dhamma understanding, then you act following the Dhamma way. And what is the Dhamma way? Cultivate the essential Dhamma, especially the Four Noble Truths, the Three Turning. Then you act according to wisdom. You act with wisdom, following the Dhamma way. And what is the way to act? The Buddha already explained under the Fourth Noble Truth. If you cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path, it will lead to the end of all suffering. Why? Because Noble Eightfold Path is incapable of evil, no negativity. Everything is about right view leading to right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood, and the four right effort, the right sati and samadhi. That's why the embodiment of the Noble Eightfold Path are the noble qualities of enlightened beings. These are all very noble path factors that you need to live life. So when you act following Noble Eightfold Path, you are incapable of negativity, and there is wholesomeness and wisdom within, because it's based on right view. Then you arise the right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood. Then you have the four right effort to constantly purify. Then you are mindful, you are aware, you are observant, you are sensitive. Then you have samadhi. That's why true action is based on Dhamma understanding, wisdom. And Dhamma understanding is the cultivation of the essential Dhamma leading to the unfolding of wisdom. Then you have the embodiment of the Noble Eightfold Path factor. Then only you can be a noble one or enlightened one. So without the Noble Eightfold Path factors cultivated clearly, you can't. Just give me a minute. I need to answer this call. Then after this, I'll continue. Okay, sorry about the disturbance from the phone. So I'll continue. So just now I was sharing with you about enlightened beings. They will have the embodiment of the Noble Eightfold Path factor. Otherwise, they cannot become noble ones. They will have noble qualities. And noble qualities of the Noble Eightfold Path is what the teaching is all about. According to the Buddha, you cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path, and you have the Noble Eightfold Path factors, it will lead to the end of all suffering. Means you become enlightened. You will not suffer anymore. So Noble Eightfold Path is the right way to act. You have to act following the Dhamma way, following Noble Eightfold Path. And this is wisdom way. Noble Eightfold Path are the right view, reading, the right thought, right speech, right action. Everything is about right understanding. That's why it's wisdom way. So this understanding is very important. So all action, you need to act with wisdom. And when you act with wisdom, it's spontaneous. You don't need to think. You don't need to like slowly go through memory and all those things and weigh how you should act. That one is normally leading to the mundane egoic mind, selfishness and all those things that will lead to selfish action, where you are acting according to memory, views, opinion and conditioning. Okay, we'll continue. That's why that day during the Thursday class, somebody told me she can do things spontaneously. It was Sister Ingdi. While in the office, there was a colleague who earlier on had a misunderstanding with her. This colleague thought she was the one who did his year-end appraisal. He was not happy because he didn't get a good appraisal. But later on, he came to know that his appraisal was not done by Sister Ingdi. Then a few days later, after the Cameron Highland retreat, Sister Eng Bee brought along some strawberry to her office and placed it on the table near the storeroom. Then this colleague of hers walked by and spontaneously she talked to him. She said, "There are some strawberries that I brought back from Cameron Highland, and you can have it. It's quite nice." Surprisingly, he was very friendly this time. And at the same time, Eng Bee didn't feel anything because later on when she was on her own, then with her awareness, she came to realize that it was the awareness that enabled her to act spontaneously. If she had thought about it, she would not have approached this colleague because there was already the memory that said, "This colleague doesn't like me." So it may arise some misunderstanding if I approach him. When she recalled and reflected upon all this, missed this incident, she just smiled because suddenly this colleague was not like before anymore, so friendly already. He already like could respond with such pleasantness and is now so different. So this is the difference between spontaneous action that happens naturally and the one with the planned approach. You know what is planned approach? You know, you plan your action. You strategize your action, how to speak, how to approach the situation. Do you realize when you do that, you are very, very unnatural? You are very, very unnatural. And people can feel that you are not sincere because you actually already plan your action. So sometimes you plan to actually tell him off or maybe avoid him or whatever. So you become very unnatural. But when it's spontaneous, people can feel that you're very sincere. And because there is condition for you to respond, you just respond. That's why I put in the bracket. The one with the planned approach, via thought consideration, is not natural at all. So you will come to understand all this on your own. Then we go on to the next subsection, 5.3.18. Check and question the thought. Now this one is very important. People can see it because the planning is by the thought. And thought is always selfish and egoic before you become enlightened. Now this is the part cultivator must be aware of. If you can't even be aware of this, then what happened? You may think you already enlightened. You may also think you're a hell of a great guy with all the knowledge. So without mindfulness and awareness, you cannot have this understanding. So all the planning is always by the thought. And the thought which is egoic is always selfish before you become enlightened, before you awaken, before you have the Dhamma. That's why before you become enlightened, try not to use so much of your thought process. When you have straightened your view, then you can use thought. Otherwise, thought is very dangerous. That's why Bhayan Kathy asks you to check and question the thought. Is it true? And the second line of question is, are you sure it is absolutely the truth? If you don't have the mindfulness, awareness, and the understanding, you surely will say, yes, it's the truth. And then with her third line of questioning, you will start to understand how thought deludes you. The third question is, what happened when you think that thought? That selfish thought, the angry thought, the emotional thought, the thought that carry the envy, jealousy, hatred, fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, and lamentation. All these are wrong thoughts. So when you think that thought, you suffer, you become miserable. So the third line of questioning is the one that awakens you. Then when you realize that, you will respond, oh, when I think that thought, I become miserable, I become unhappy, I'm afflicted. These are wrong thoughts. It conditions my fear, my worry, my anxiety, my sorrow, and my lamentation. Then the fourth question, the fourth line of questioning is the solution, the answer. Then she teaches you how to question finally. Without those thoughts, how will you be? Then you realize, oh, before those thoughts came in, I was normal. I was happy. And I was beautiful. Then you will come to realize that all these thoughts are wrong thoughts that make you unhappy, miserable, fearful, selfish, with the evil roots. That's why they are all wrong thoughts. So this wrong thought deceive you. So see that, be mindful of it, observe it in the meditation, in your daily life. When you can see all this, you will progress. That is what meditation is all about. So look at the way you act. Before you have the Dhamma understanding, you are always selfish, egoic. The evil roots are always there. You seldom have pure action, action that have no evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. Actually, sometimes to do good, to develop merits, you attach to the action, then it is tinted merit, it's not true merit. Like sometimes you want to make an offering, dana. You try to help people, be generous. Then you have this thought or this Dhamma knowledge. Oh, this is meritorious action. Your generosity is one of the 10 meritorious actions. If I keep precept, I have merits. If I do good, I develop merits. If I have generosity, I also develop merits. If you were to look at it that way, do you know what happened? Yes, the action is meritorious, but it's not a pure action. Do you understand? You act out of what? Out of greed for that merits. Do you see that? So if you act out of greed, it's not a pure action. Although the action, being generous, doing dana, helping people, is really meritorious. But your underlying rational behind your action is what? You have greed for the merits. That's how Bodhidharma responded to the emperor. When the emperor asked him, I have built so many temples, supported so many monasteries, monks and all those things. How much merits do you think I have? The emperor got a shock when Bodhidharma replied, zero, you don't have any merits. Because to Bodhidharma, he is an enlightened being. So true merits are pure merits without the evil roots. And the emperor that actually did all this was because he heard people say, if you do all this, according to Buddhist teaching, you will accumulate a lot of merits. So your action is out of consideration for those merits, means you act out of greed for those merits. But if you have the Dhamma understanding, then you will not act this way. You act because there is condition to act. Like people come and maybe pass you the message. Hey, at this place, they are going to have katina. And the monks are very virtuous. Are you keen to join us? Then you don't go and consider the merits. You just check and develop the understanding. Then if you are free, you will spontaneously answer, let me go through my schedule. If I am free, I may join you. Otherwise, Just let things be. The funny thing about all this is, if it's meant to be, there will one, at least one or two signs. The sign will come. Let's say the first one people tell you, then you say, oh, it's okay. Especially after you have developed the cultivation. Because I remember during the early days, after 1989, actually I don't need to do all this anymore. Because to me, all this is still at the level when you cultivate, where you still do a lot of this because you believe the marriage is very important, very helpful. And you cannot deny that because at that stage it's like that. But when you have developed the Dhamma understanding and awakened, do you know that every moment, every instant, your thought is pure? That pure thought without the evil root, one moment of pure thought, the wholesomeness is limitless. So actually, when you have the ability to be in that mind state, doing marriage is of not much meaning. You will not purposely want to do anymore because you know you have developed the understanding and the ability to develop such wholesomeness that normal people cannot understand. And there is no comparison. Then during that time, I remember when people asked me to go for a retreat, do katina or dana offering, I just can't do. Because not to say I don't want to do what I want to do, because my nature understands not much meaning anymore. But I will not reject or say no and all those things. I will really look at it, observe it, then see the condition behind. When there is condition, I still go. Yeah. And normally when there is condition, the sign will come again. The condition will arise again. Another person may tell you the same thing. Then sometimes certain affinity and condition will just manifest. Then your nature will know. Especially after one or two times. Yeah. Then there were incidents where it was 6-7 times. That one I know. I don't know who that guy is. I must meet him. That's why your nature will know. So it will manifest on its own. Then you will know what to do. That is understanding condition. Means when there is condition to act, you act. When there is condition to do something, you will do. Even you may not know that person, or even your action may not be what normal people will understand. But normally they say, hey, that guy is not related to you, has nothing to do with you. How come you go all out to help him? Because there is condition. There is affinity. Like sharing Dhamma is the same. Sometimes people who know me, talk to me, ask me questions or think, when there is no condition, I cannot speak the Dhamma. I cannot advise him the way it is to be advised. Even last time, initially, I remember my own father. I can't, because there is no condition. The Dhamma just cannot come out. But when there is condition, spontaneously it will come out, automatic. There's sometimes people whom I don't know. There is affinity, I will share, I will speak the Dhamma. Then I will guide them and teach them. So all this, as you progress along the path of Dhamma or cultivation, you will start to understand all this. Then all your action is out of wisdom, understanding. You look at condition. When there is condition, then things happen. When there is no condition, nothing happens. This is the ultimate Dhamma understanding, where you can act following condition and wisdom, following the Dhamma way. That is the real progress. Otherwise, still memory, still knowledge, still the egoic mind functioning actively up there. So mindfulness or awareness is very important. When you are aware of your own defilement, your own delusion, egoic, mundane mind, then you can see all this selfishness going on, all this egoic thinking going on, then you realize all of your action is always based on selfishness, the evil roots. But when you have developed the wisdom, you will act following the Dhamma way, which is the wisdom way. You act because there is reason and condition to act. You don't act because people prompt you and say, hey, this one very good, no, very meritorious, no. Or then you do merits. You make offering to one who keep the five precepts and 100 who don't keep the five precepts. The one you do to the five precepts, the merit is how many times. You will not believe all these things anymore. Yeah. These are for people who are not well versed in the Dhamma. They go and compare. Then sometimes they tell you, you make offering to an 8 preceptor, 100 times the merit more than the one who keep the 5 precepts. Then, because of that, you become gullible. Then you only want to do to the one that keep the 5 precepts, 8 precepts, or 10 precepts. Then the monk keep 227. No. Then you think that is the one that will have, give you a lot of merit. Then you do all this based on what? More merits. That is delusion. So you have to understand, when there is condition to act, sometimes you help out a person who is maybe a normal putijana that don't know the Dhamma. Since they don't know the Dhamma, very likely they don't have the precepts. But it's okay, because there is condition to act. Where this person may be very sincere, very kind, at that moment, during that instant. And there is condition, then you act. In fact, that action is very pure. And is so much more wholesome and meritorious than whatever you do. Because if you don't have the understanding, you have greed for merit and you want to make offering to enlightened being, or even very virtuous being, that merit is tinted merit, cannot compare to the pure merit that you do to a normal human being. Do you see that? When you understand that, you become very different. So the Dhamma way is not the logical, mundane way of human beings. So all this, as you cultivate, you will start to develop a clear understanding. Okay, we continue with the sharing. Okay, check and question the thoughts, so I have finished. First paragraph done, yes. Then we move on to the second paragraph. That's why the Buddha states it clearly in the Noble Eightfold Path that you must have right thought, born of right view and right understanding. How to arise right thought? The user of thought is very important. Always remember that. Thought is actually just thought, neutral, neither good or bad, like money, neither good or bad. It's the user of thought and the user of money. That's why you don't cultivate, don't develop the right view, the right understanding and the wisdom. You cannot act. The user of thought, if it's deluded, thought will become wrong thought. Thought cannot become wholesome thought, right thought. So all this understanding is very important. That's why the emphasis is on the user of thought. The user of thought is very important. If the user of thought is deluded, how can it be right thought? If the user of thought is deluded, thought will become evil. That's why you must put in the right effort to cultivate virtue, goodness, kindness, etc. to arise the right thought that are still not in you after you have straightened your views. So when you have straightened your view, you will know what constitutes right thought. The pure thought that you arise that are free of the evil roots of greed, hatred and delusion, they are all right thought. Like respect, gratitude, generosity, kindness, goodness, they are all right thought. There is no evil roots. When you are being kind and generous, there is no evil root. But when you are selfish, angry, emotional, fearful, the evil roots are there. So if the user of thought has wisdom, then all this become beautiful. Then the user of thought has wisdom, has right understanding, has what they call wholesomeness. So right thought become very natural, very easy. Then I will read on and you will understand. That's why you must have the right effort to cultivate virtue, goodness, and kindness, etc., to arise the right thought that are still not in you. So this is the third right effort, eh? After you have straightened your view. So after you have straightened your view, you will understand what constitutes right thought, what constitutes wrong thought. The one with the evil roots are wrong thought, without the evil roots are right thought. To have right view, you must have the understanding of the five universal order or nature's law that governs all of life and existence, especially the law of karma, karma niyama, and the law of mind, chitta niyama. Otherwise, without the straightening of your views, via the right view, your thought will always be wrong thought. So go back to the Noble Eightfold Path, first path factor, samadhi, right view. So right view with regards to law of karma, karma niyama, followed by law of mind, how you function as a human being, chitta niyama. Then the third one is right view with regards to truth, dhamma niyama. Because the teaching of the Buddha is called dhamma. And what he teaches is truth. That's why the essence of his teaching is the Four Noble Truths. Truth that can make you noble ones. So these Dhamma Niyamas are all his teaching, the essential Dhamma. So if you have right view with regards to this essential Dhamma or his teaching, then you know how to act. Because this is following the Dhamma way, wisdom way. But to understand his teaching is not easy. To have Dhamma Niyama understanding is not easy. So right view with regards to Dhamma is not easy. You must cultivate. You must develop the awakening, the transformation. Without wisdom, that third right view, Dhamma Niyama, cannot arise. Effect for all the three, karma niyama, chitta niyama, and dhamma niyama. So these are the three right views, spiritual laws. Whereas the other two, scientific law, uttu niyama and bijja niyama, they are non-spiritual law. So that one, for the scientists, after they have developed the understanding and breakthrough of these two nature's law, they progress along the scientific field very, very fast. That's why they understand many things. And all of our evolution of civilization, leading to the last 30, 40 years of fantastic progress, sophistication of technology, and all the things that we have learned and developed came from science. Came from our ability to understand and master the first two nature's law of uttu niyama and bijja niyama. Uttu niyama is the nature's physical order of things. Bijja niyama is our nature's biological order of things. So these two laws, the scientist has actually developed a lot of understanding and progress. That's why there is a lot of breakthrough. And they have awarded a lot of Nobel Prize to very good scientists and researchers, especially physicists. Actually, physics, chemistry, biology. That's why they are the three major stream of science. Then from biology, you have genetic, botany, and many other things, and even science, physics and chemistry, you can spin off into all the other professional you call it what? Profession, like engineering profession, even accountancy. They all come from the understanding of science, especially physics and chemistry. For scientists and engineers and physicists, they actually develop the understanding to the Uttu Niyama. Then for doctors, genetic engineering and all those things, then those that deal with biology, biological orders, they are the ones that specialize in the understanding of that nature's law that has this biological understanding, means bija niyamas. But as a spiritual cultivator, that's why we develop spirituality, spiritual wisdom and understanding. For us, the spiritual laws are more important. That's why the scientists are good at the first two scientific laws, Uttu Niyama and Bija Niyama. But the Buddha, being the Sammasambuddha, the fully enlightened one, he's an expert in the three sets of spiritual law. He has understood Kama Niyama, Citta Niyama, and Dhamma Niyama deeply. He has perfected all the understanding. That's why he is the wisest and the most virtuous living being ever to be born when they arise. So these are the various beauty of the Dhamma, the beautiful aspect of Dhamma. So when you understand the three great spiritual laws, it means you have right view. When you have right view, you will have the ability to act. That's why right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood will follow the Noble Eightfold Path will unfold. Then when you have right view, all the teaching will unfold. You will have the understanding. From the right view, you will move, because you have to straighten your view in order to act, in order to develop the understanding. So these are very beautiful. We go back to the sharing, the notes. Then there is a question. Habitual tendencies and memory. So Brother Chai, this is Chai Teng Kui. He asked, how about habits and habitual tendency that condition our action? And this is a very good question. So I say, you don't follow habitual tendency. What is habit? Memory. Do you understand? Because you accumulate experiences. Experiences that you like forms your habits. Experiences that you don't like also becomes your habit. That's why you have likes and dislikes, pleasant and unpleasant sense experience. Immediately after you see something, you react so fast. Immediately after you hear something, you also react. Then, similarly for smell, taste, tactile, and thought, you also will do the same. Why did you react to all this sense experience? Because you have become so heedless. And heedlessness develops habitual tendency where you repeat it. And what are habitual tendencies? No need to think. But this is not spontaneous. This is mechanical. Also, you will act that way because it has become deep-rooted habits. But that is your habitual tendency. And it comes from your conditioning via your wrong view. Especially so your self-delusion, which will condition you to arise the three evils of greed, hatred, and delusion, to react to sense experience, thereby making you heedless. This heedless mundane mind will condition you to have strong habitual tendency to discriminate, to react and to do things following your wrong view. That's why when you hear something from your wife, especially for married couple, straight away you will react. You may say, ah, I know what you want to tell me, or say, Renee, that's enough. You may also do it to your son and your children because it has become so habitual. Every time you scold them using the same word, like, told you not to do, you still want to do. And then one day your children may react back and say to you, ah, mommy, daddy, that's enough. I know what you're going to tell me. Then what happened? You will become very unhappy, very sore, isn't it? All this can arise because you are not conscious in that way or heedful at that time. The habitual tendencies took over through what? Through your anger, your selfishness, your unhappiness, your ego, etc. Which are your evil roots born of wrong thought that condition your habitual tendency? Because you already given it some thought and you accumulated all these unhappy thoughts, their memory. Then they become what? Your anusaya or latent tendency. Then without condition, they don't come out. But when there is condition, then it will just come out like a machine gun where you have planned and plotted it. They just pop up. No need to think at all because you already memorized and pre-planned as to what you want to do the next time when the same situation arises. Then you will rethought. You think you're very good? You also were like that before. Why? Because of the so-called latent tendency, waiting to erupt when there is condition for it to arise. So human beings, due to your heedlessness, do a lot of this foolish thing. So hopefully you all can follow us. Then the other thing about habitual tendencies, like the first two mental hindrances, we always share. First two mental hindrances, essential desire and you will. Because of your habitual tendency. Yeah. So how do we develop all this sensual desire in you? Because we have this duality. Whenever we see something, we have our views and our opinion. So when you see something, you will respond according to your views and opinion. When you do not agree, means it's against your views and opinion, what happened? You will dislike that thing. Then if it's something that coincides with your desire or craving or something that you like, then you will have sensual desire for it. Yeah. Then you feel good. It's like pleasant and unpleasant sensation, like and dislike. They keep on arising every moment of consciousness when you see something, hear something, smell something, taste something, tactile, feel something, or think of something. You realize if you are mindful, your mind always reacts and the duality always come up. Almost throughout the day before you have this Dhamma understanding, wisdom, and mindfulness, you are not sensitive and you realize all this duality of like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant reaction of to sense experience, they occur so frequently. So almost throughout the day, every moment of sense experience, you create the sensual desire, you will, the evil roots, the hindrance of mind. Then how can you be peaceful? Well, these are mental hindrances. It will hinder your mind from entering the meditative state. And if throughout the day you keep on repeating this, it becomes mechanical. Then it becomes habit. Habit means automatic, mechanical. This is not spontaneous, no. But this one is without wisdom. It becomes automatic, so mechanical. It's not spontaneous. Because this one is already deeply ingrained. The wrong view. the wrong thought, the egoic mind, the scarcity. So this is how habits develop. So when you are mindful and aware, after you have straightened your view, then you will be able to be at peace with whatever that arises. That is wisdom. When you can accept the reality of the moment, you have wisdom. Like the Buddha said, whatever that arises or happens, there are causes and conditions behind. So what does it mean? When the causes and conditions are already established or planted, it means things will go that way. It will be unfolding in the way it is unfolding, means the reality. That's why you have to accept the reality of the moment. You have to be at peace with what is the reality. With conditions all set, when conditions are set, things will unfold in that manner. Just like let it unfold. Then do not react. Do not stir your mind. Do not want things your way, otherwise you suffer. Then you are at peace. When you are at peace, you have clarity of mind. You do not project your thought. You do not stir and react. There is no evil root. There is clarity. There is peace. There is calmness. Then you can act. You have clarity of mind to act. Then you can inquire, what are my options? What actually went wrong? And how can I resolve all this amicably, following the Dhamma way, which means applying Noble Eightfold Path? That is right action, based on right view, to accept the reality of the moment first. Don't react, don't stir. So if you don't react and don't stir, then you reverse your habitual tendency. Then throughout the day, you can accept the reality of the moment. Because like I always share with you the wisdom, people are just the way they are. So accept them for what they are, that you are at peace. No matter how nasty that person is or how difficult that person is, no problem, he is the way he is. It doesn't mean I ask you to agree with what he do. No, but accept him for what he is. Deluded people do deluded things. Angry people say angry things. Selfish people do selfish things. Deluded people with fear do deluded and fearful things. They are just the way they are. Accept them. Then you are at peace. Then the world is the world. Conditioned like that, things will be like that. It cannot be otherwise. Why do you want to go against the reality? Why do you want to go against what is? Every time you argue against what is, you suffer. Why? Because you want things your way. What is the reality. You cannot argue. We have conditions set. Conditions like that, things will be like that. It cannot be otherwise. So these understandings are very important, very powerful, and very helpful. So you apply all this understanding through straightening your view, then you start to change. Then with mindfulness, this understanding will prompt you. At the moment of sense experience, when you see somebody, this wisdom will come up. He is just the way he is. The world is the world. Then you at peace. And then only you act. You do what you have to do. Then you arise the Dhamma understanding, right view, in regards to law of karma. Most of the time, it's law of karma. Like the Buddha said, we are all born of karma, heir to our karma conditions, supported by our karma. And we are what we are because of karma. So whatever happened, it definitely has a lot to do with karma. So when we accept it as karma, we have right view, then we know what to do. These are things that we did in the past. And because there is condition now, you become the victim. That's why it hit back. And you become the victim. You have to endure the suffering. You have to develop the wisdom to severe it. So do what you have to do. If you need to ask for forgiveness, ask for forgiveness. Then determine not to repeat all this by following the advice of the Buddha to avoid all evil, to good, and purify the mind. When you do that, means you keep your precepts, you cultivate Dhamma understanding, you meditate. Then you develop the Dhamma way to straighten your views, to overcome all this. Then you develop a lot of wholesomeness, merits. And then the third way is, the third solution is to invoke power of merits for turnaround. Yeah. To help you in whatever way you want. It can also help you to pave the way for causes and conditions to always avoid the foolish and the heedless, meet out with the wise, so that enlightenment in the here and the now can be realized. Then if it's involving your first noble truth realities problem, like health problem, relationship problem, or even your loved one's problem, you can invoke power of merits for causes and conditions for turnaround, for you to recover to good health, yeah, or for your whatever situation to improve, so that you can gain back, yeah, your, like, to normal, beautiful condition, for you to continue to live life. To have the ability to continue to do what you want to do in life. So all these are the solution that you can arise to help you overcome whatever first noble truth realities problem that you encounter. Okay, so with this, I think we will end. So we'll continue with our second session. Second session is meditation reporting, and asking a question. Ah, yes.
Hello. Hi, good evening, Brother Teo.
Oh, indeed. Yes.
I'm a friend of Sister Christina. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay. Nice to meet you. Huh?
My
Sister Christina, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I've been coming along, joining you. I'm actually in Sarawak.
Oh, Sadhu, wow, far away. Yeah. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, I've been always trying to be diligent and listening and learning from Dhamma from you.
Oh, Sadhu. We have a website, you know about it.
Yeah, I'll get it from Sister Christina.
Okay. Yeah. Then, do you have any question on the Dhamma or?
No, not so much. I'm still doing my old self contemplation. I see a lot of defilements. I have to clear myself.
Oh, don't worry. Everybody start from somewhere. Huh?
Yes.
So it's normal. Nothing abnormal. Right. What about meditation? Do you do meditation?
I'm starting to learn. I think I have to go back to the basic. During these few classes, I've been trying to clear my mind. You know, just be aware and. Obviously, a lot of fluctuation of the thoughts coming in and going out.
Okay, very good. What do you do when you know that all these thoughts are coming in to disturb you, make you restless? What is your state of mind?
I follow it for a while, but then I tell myself, hey, this is not the way to follow. Come back. Yeah. And just go back to my breathing. I don't know, I'm not doing the right thing or not. I'm not really.
Okay, very good. You listen. I will let you understand better. I will guide you. So this is very normal. What you share is actually very normal. Mm-hmm. Most people, when they started, they go through all this, but they don't know what is going on. That's why my advice is always, you must meditate with understanding. Mm-hmm. Understanding means what? You must understand why are you developing this meditation. Means first, you must understand what is this meditation as taught by the Buddha. The Buddha said to meditate, you must be heedful. That is the first thing. You are here to develop heedfulness. And to be heedful, there are two components. Ever mindful, constantly meditative. So for you to be ever mindful, you first have to develop mindfulness. So you must understand what sati is, what mindfulness is. That's how you start. And sati is awareness before the knowing. So before your thought arises, there is sati. The moment the thought is active, there is no sati. You cannot be aware. So awareness is not a knowing. It's not like you're aware of what. Awareness means the awareness is awake. Means when you are heedless with a lot of mental hindrance, you think a lot like what you experience. So when you think a lot, that is because the, according to the Buddha's teaching, you lack the five spiritual faculties. Saddha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya. When you lack that, the opposite five, the mental hindrance will arise and cause you to think a lot and become heedless and restless. Then what you did was, because you lack this understanding, you follow the thought. That's where a lot of people went wrong. Then you realize you become very tired. It doesn't take you anywhere. Then you decide through what? Through the thought telling you, I must do anapanasati, go back to the breathing. And then you try this, you try that. That is what thought-based meditation is all about. Verbalization, trying to do things. Thinking that by doing all these things, you are meditating. You can become peaceful. You can become aware and mindful. No. What the Buddha teaches is very simple. He said mindfulness is an awareness before the thinking, before the knowing. So when you are aware, that's why I say relax and maintain awareness. Don't try to know. Don't follow. Don't do anything. Just relax. Maintain awareness. Then find out what will happen to your mind. Your mind will return to its original state before the thinking. Means your true mind before you have this heedless thinking. So for it to have the ability, you must be patient. Relax, at ease. Don't try to know, don't do anything. Thought arise, let it arise. Just aware, finish. Aware, finish. Then let it settle down. If you continue to do that, means you do not feed the thought with more thought energy. You don't follow. You don't try to do anything. Then there is no energy going in. Then whatever random of thought, they will slow down. Slow down. Because the very flowering of that thought is the very ending of that thought. So allow it to flower and cease. Then you will suddenly feel the quietness. The silence, the stillness, that is like a shift of consciousness. When that time happened, that thing happened, that is the beginning of meditation. When you start to realize your true mind, your silent mind, without thought. Yeah. But people don't understand that. That's why they cannot meditate. So what you need to do is relax, maintain awareness, don't try to know, don't do anything. Don't go and worry about the thought. If you dislike the thought and you try to do something, that is delusion, wrong view. Because there is a mental hindrance, like and dislike. Why must you have this duality of like and dislike? To you, you should have this understanding. Before I train my mind, I am heedless. Because I don't have the spiritual faculty. That's why it's very natural for the mind to think, to be heedless. Let it be. When you accept that reality means what? You don't have like and dislike anymore. You don't complain about the meditation anymore. But a lot of people, through wrong understanding, they say, I come here to meditate, to become peaceful. Now I am not peaceful. I think a lot. Then you try to follow the thought. Then you try to follow the thought telling you go to anapanasati, go to that word, means you are not doing anything that is useful, fruitful. At least when you say you go to the breath, anapanasati, you really do anapanasati, is very useful. Well, this is also what the Buddha teach. The first training of kaya anupassana is anapanasati, to train your mind to be mindful of the in and out breath. If you do that, then that is the training. Part of meditation. That is good. But most people can't because the thought tell them, then they try. And they try without understanding. Where they go and note. Some they ask you to count the breath, 1 to 10. And some they ask you to verbalize, breathing in, aware, breathing out. As long as you continue to verbalize, you cannot learn. What is important is anapanasati is just mindfulness of the in and out breath, means aware at the nostril. then breathing in, that movement of the breath going in, develop awareness of it. That's why you allow it to be. But before you can have the ability to stay there, this mind wanders off very far. You realize, split second, you are no longer with the breath. The thoughts come out already. Never mind. The moment you are aware that you are no longer with the breath, come back to the breath. It needs patience. It needs training. So as long as you are patient, continue to bring the mind back and maintain awareness of the breath. It's just like relax and maintain awareness. Then breathing in, aware, means what? Your awareness is aware of the in-breath. Then breathing out, aware. Your awareness is aware of the out-breath. Just do that. Don't try to know. Then when you become stable, skillful, then you realize you start to experience that peaceful breath. Then every breath, whether in or out breath, is just aware, peaceful, without thought. And then you experience piti. You experience a calm mind. You experience a mind that is just aware, without thought. That is the beginning of sati. So all this understanding is very important. So don't follow the thought. Don't do anything. Just let it be. The fastest way is let the thought slow down. Then, because you maintain awareness, you will experience a shift in consciousness. Suddenly, your mind becomes very quiet or much more quiet. Then don't be curious. Stay relaxed and aware and maintain awareness until the awareness nature becomes very stable, very clear. And then you are in sati. Then you will understand what that true mind is, what meditation is. That mind, which is a free mind, can become quiet and peaceful with the tranquility and the stillness on its own. That is the real meditation. Okay? Hopefully you can understand. Huh? Yeah, you hold on. Eh? My daughter has something to share. Huh? Sui has something to share. Yeah,
hey, Brother Andy, your topic actually reminded me of an experience I had. When I had a very busy day, there'll be a lot of thoughts. And instead of saying come back, I realized what really helped me was when I realized I had a lot of thoughts going on, or carried away already, I feel. Then I realized here is like a fist clenched.
Yeah, one, yeah.
When
yeah.
The thinking
tightness,
is happening. Then
tightness.
All
yeah.
I do is like,
relax.
I'm aware of this feeling, then I
relax.
Then actually no more, the thoughts like slow down.
Yeah, yeah.
Instead of giving it instruction, come
yeah,
back or
yeah,
whatever,
yeah.
I feel then, oh, here, yeah. Very tight. More I think, more tight. It's like a
yeah,
fist slowly
yeah,
clenching.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I let go, relax. Yeah. That, so the relax actually helped. It will unwind and then slowly...
Yeah, that is very good. In fact, that is the mind sweeping method that I teach. It's the initial skillful means. Yeah, mind sweeping method means you sweep your mind from the forehead down. So when you do the mind sweeping method, you feel, you don't think. That is to decondition your heedless thinking. That one very fast. Within 1-2 minutes, you become very quiet. So you just feel, relax. Then you move to your eye muscle, feel, relax. That's why my daughter realized that is the fastest way. Don't do anything. But this is the fastest way to decondition your heedless thinking. So all this understanding can help. These are skillful means to train. So next time, try the mind sweeping method. Do you know the instruction for mind sweeping method? It's in one of the book, I think, the blue book.
Okay.
Yeah, you check that thing. If you don't know what book, then you go to our website. Mm. I think there is these two books on meditation on blue color.
Right.
Yeah, I think Sui An can send the link out. Or Chin Hao also can send the link out. Or Aho, I'll show you the color first.
I've seen it,
you've shown it
before.
Ah, you've seen it before, very good. The volume one is very useful. I asked my wife to bring it, then I show to the others also. You read through that one, you will understand. But that one is a real Thursday class, full session, then that very good sharing, somebody volunteered to do a transcript, and the transcript came out very well. That's why I suggest to them, we print it out. The book is here now, I show you. Understanding the meditation is taught by the Buddha, part one and part two. So this one is part one. This one is part two. The deeper blue is part two. You read part one, it will help you. The mind stream method is all there. So this one will help you.
Okay.
So thank you so much. Andy, you got any other question?
No, it's okay. For time being.
It's okay. MC. Sadhu. So Andy has nominated you.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone.
Yeah.
So my turn again.
Yeah.
I just share about a little bit of my cultivation.
Oh, very good. That one will be very helpful. It can help many people. Yeah, Sadhu.
Actually, 6 weeks before my maid went back, actually almost 1 month now. So 6 weeks before my maid went back, suddenly I just realized, it's time for me to start cultivating, you know. So I just make up my mind, and I get up early every morning, 6 o'clock, and I do bowing, I do puja. Until now.
Oh, very good.
So it has been, I think, about 2 months plus.
Oh, sadhu, very good.
So and it's very difficult for me to get up in the morning.
Yeah.
But once I make up my mind to do to get up early, so every morning before the alarm clock rings, I will automatically get up, wake up, you know.
That determination is very important. Aditan, they call it. So that one will wake you up. Then you will do it diligently.
So without fail, even Saturday, Sunday.
Wow, sadhu. Very good.
I mean, almost 2 months.
Oh.
So every day I get up 6 o'clock.
That will bring about a lot of progress. You will become very different. Then throughout the day, your daily mindfulness will come.
So even when, actually, I had maid for 27 years. So when my maid actually came back, went back for good 1 month ago, I had no negativity also. I accept the fact it's time for us to live independently without me. So it's a time that really that we learn to live our life on our own. So there's no negativity, you know.
Yeah.
And for the past 1 month, we are coping very well.
Very good.
We still cope. So everything everything goes well.
Yeah, that should be the way. When you have the understanding, when you don't have negativity, then you become free. You are not dependent on the maid anymore. Then you realize you can do it. Your whole family can actually help and chip in and do it together. And in fact, without maid is better training. Otherwise, we become dependent. Then your determination to do the wake up early, to do all the daily religious routine, to train yourself, to do the bowing, the meditation, the whatever puja chanting or thing is very useful. That's how you establish the continuity of sati, mindfulness training. The meditative training also lead to the meditative daily mindfulness training, because everything you do when you establish mindfulness, your daily mindfulness come to be, especially bowing. Then after that, the four posture, then every action, every movement in the present moment. Then your mind will be different. Very good, Sadhu.
Yeah, every morning I come down, so I will do, I mean, for the past 1 month, so I know what to do, you know. I just get things done.
Mindfully.
Everything is so. I mean, there's no.
Like you can.
I know what to do like, automatically, you know.
You can do things orderly now because you have used to it. The routine, you have that used to it. So everything just like a routine for you. Then you can do it mindfully and you will enjoy
Correct.
Everything done with mindfulness, there is joy. Even go and buy fruits also, there is joy. There is understanding and awareness of what is going on. And for the first time, you realize the moment you are aware, you are less heedless. The moment you are aware, you are less heedless. So awareness and heedlessness, they are opposite. The moment you are aware, you cannot be heedless anymore. So every moment of awareness that accumulate to become a continuous daily mindfulness is the training to become heedful, to become mindful, ever mindful. That is very important. There's a determined to be aware. Every action.
Yeah, there's clarity. What I want to do. And what is the next thing that I need to do, you know?
Yeah, there is clarity. Yeah, you have the clear mind. And you are more efficient. Because you don't
worry. Correct.
You don't worry. You don't have those negativity of mind state. You don't
worry. Not at all.
Forget your thought, you are very focused in your work. Your duty as a mother,
correct.
For your children, you do your daily duty. So all this is very wholesome. Then there is a lot of joy. But this is Dhamma way.
Yeah.
So, you realize your mind state is so different from a normal person who grumbles a lot, complains a lot. So this is what Dhamma in daily life is all about. Sadhu to you, Elsie. Yeah. Keep it up. Sadhu. Very good.
Actually, I'm very thankful to my mate who helped me for 16 years, you know.
Yeah.
So she really helped me a lot. I mean, big help to me.
Yes,
during the early days. So now is the time. Anyway, my children all grown up.
Yeah.
So no problem for us.
Sadhu, very good. Anything else?
So that's what I want to share.
Okay, good. Thank you so much, Elsie. Let us rejoice with the good sharing from Andy and Elsie. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.